Please turn with me to 1 John chapter 2. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. And my title for this evening is taken from these verses, Shaped by the World. Shaped by the world. Are we shaped by the world? Naturally speaking, yes, we are. Everyone who's born into this world, as we'll see, is shaped by the world. There are different things, yes, that influence us as we're growing up. Our families, our environment, shape us. The country even that we grew up in, the culture that we grew up in, different cultures. They all shape the way that we think and the opinions that we form and the decisions maybe that we make. But we're thinking here about our character. What shapes your character? What shapes my character? What makes you the kind of person that you are? And when we read a biography, or when you listen to a podcast about a famous person or a famous life, it's very interesting to see how they've reached their fame. But we want to know as well, and a good interviewer, a good writer, author, well, they'll bring out the formative experiences of that person. What made him what he is today? How come she is like she is today? Why is this person such a fighter for social justice? What were the formative experiences that they had in their life? Good experiences maybe, bad experiences maybe. But what was it? What was it that influenced this author? She's such a great author. She's able to captivate people in her writing. How did she end up like this? Who was it? Who was the biggest influence in her life? What got her into writing in the first place? Why did she choose go down that path? All these things we are interested and keen to know of and to learn. But friends, it's not only the famous people who are shaped by experience and by influences. We all are. Each one of us are shaped in some way or other by things outside of ourselves and also things within us. As we said, our family or our circumstances may be the result why we are like as we are today, or the education that we had in life. And that also dictates to a certain extent the kind of character and person that you are. But there are other powers that are at work. There are other things which have a much bigger effect on us. And these are not something which are external to us, but something which are internal. Something which we are born with. And these powers are summarized for us here in verse 16. All that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. Those three things summarize in a nutshell the kind of powers that are in people, in each one of us, and are forming our characters. These are the strong desires, the longings, the cravings that are within us, that are forming us. And they're much more powerful, friends, than the external influences that we come across. These things, these desires are in all of us. They may be all three of them are present in some degree or other. Maybe one is more prominent than the other. Or maybe two, or maybe even all three are very prominent in a person's life. but at least one probably will dominate us and form us and make us, and it's working as a power to shape us into what it wants us to be. We think we're in control. We think we come into this world with a clean slate, and we can sculpture ourselves and form ourselves as we want us to be and make us to be. But actually the Bible teaches us that we come into this world with sin. We come into the world with these desires already in our hearts. And you look at a baby, it looks so innocent, and in a sense it is innocent. But as you see that baby growing up, well, you see its character forming. And you see these things coming out more and more in the person. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. These things come out, and they form that child, they form that young teenager, they're forming that adult into the kind of person it wants it to be. Yes, the outside influences have an effect, but these inner powers have a much deeper effect. And verse 15, before we look at these three in a little bit of detail, verse 15 calls us to examine ourselves. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. Now when we say the world here, we're not talking about the physical world, the creation of God. That's wonderful. That's God's handiwork. We love it. We appreciate it. We see God's wisdom. We see God's power demonstrated in our created world. But here, when it says love not the world, it's talking about those three things you mentioned, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. As I said, verse 15 calls us to examine ourselves. What is in our hearts? What is in our hearts, friends? Is it the love of the world, or is it the love of the Father? One of these two will be prominent in us, and will be forming us and shaping us into the kind of person it wants us to be. One for good and one for evil. Well, friends, all of us, as we know, we have the capacity to love. It's a part of our God-given nature to love. And it's everyone. God has given us this ability to love others. It's the most natural thing in the world to do, to love other people, or to love. But love must have an object. Love cannot function on its own, independently. It must have an outlet. It must have either, it loves something or it loves someone. It may even love itself, but it cannot just exist as a non-entity on its own. It must express itself towards an object. And the question is, where is our love directed to? Where are the affections of my heart directed to? Is it towards this world, the sensual world, this fallen world, or is it towards God? And that will dictate the kind of person that I am also. Well, friends, we were made to love God as we see, but sadly, we are shaped, and we tend to follow the love of this world. Well, let's look at these three in a little bit more detail. Firstly, here John mentions in verse 16, the things that are in the world. The first one is the lust of the flesh. What's he referring to here when he says the lust of the flesh? Well, the flesh means the body. And he's talking about the strong cravings of the body, the bodily appetites, the desires of the body, which are excessive and are indulged in excessively. You could think of it as a sensual person, a one who lives for the things of sense, a one who lives for pleasure, a one who lives for the who derives this pleasure from sensual things, a person who not only eats as he has to do, but he must. He longs, he craves for exquisite dishes, for luxurious food, He's not only happy to have food on the table, but his taste buds say he must have all different kinds of foods, all different kinds of dishes to indulge. He's not a person, this kind of person not only wants to drink, he must have the best drink, he must have the best wine, so to speak. He's a sensual person in his life. He thinks about having a good life here, which only pleases his senses. This is what he desires. This is what he longs for and he seeks for. It's, friends, it's like an animal life. This is how animals live. Animals live by their senses. Animals live by their instincts. You only have to look at a dog. And you see a dog, when it's out for a walk with its owner, well, it sniffs here, it sniffs there, and then it goes somewhere else, and it sniffs there, and it sniffs everywhere. That's a dog. That's the nature of a dog. And you may take the dog out on the lead for a walk, but the dog, if it gets a scent somewhere, it'll pull you in that direction, when you may want to go in the complete opposite direction. That's because it's so attracted, it's so drawn towards that scent. And that's how a sensuous person lives, friends. He's so drawn, he may want to go in one direction, but his inner desire, his inner craving pulls him in another direction. It's a natural sort of response in his heart. And he lives for his sensual pleasures. He never thinks about his soul. He never thinks that he was created for a higher purpose. It's all about this life. It's all about this world. It's all about earthly, material senses. He has no spiritual senses. The sensual person here, he lives for his entertainments, maybe. He lives for pleasures, and he goes from one pleasure to another pleasure. Maybe he's excited by movies and TV and by soap operas, and he must have his fix of these things. Every day, he must have a little bit of pleasure, or a lot of pleasure, and then he's satisfied. The next day, he works, but he comes home, he must have again that fix, that of pleasure, that TV program or that film, even though they may contain immoral things inside them, he still loves them, and he lives for these things. He finds them enjoyable. Oh, friends, today so many are living for pleasure alone. In the Bible, it says, in the last days, men shall be lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. I remember reading of a young Indian lady, and she came to know Christ. She came to the Savior in India, and she, part of her testimony was, before she became a Christian, she was hooked on Bollywood movies. And you know Bollywood movies, well, they last hours. They're almost twice in length than the Hollywood movies. And she used to watch one after another. And every day she had to watch, and she tried to break free from it, but she couldn't. She was addicted to it until she came to Christ. And then she was set free. The Lord set her free. And that's the kind of, sometimes some people are like this. Some people, under the lust of the flesh, for them is literally a sexual cravings. They desire and long for greater sexual expression, to do what they desire to do as their heart wishes to do. They want freedom. They cry for freedom to do these things. Well, friends, we hear that call for freedom all the time today. But it's not something new. This is something that goes back all the way to the 19th century. So much of what is happening today, we can trace it back all the way to the 19th century and the writings of Friedrich Nietzsche or Oscar Wilde and their fight for this kind of sexual freedom. You could think of Oscar Wilde. I'm sure you know Oscar Wilde, the Irish poet and playwright, by all accounts, a very good writer. A brilliant writer, from what I've never read any of his books, but from what the reviews have said about him. He is a very capable man, But he was also a homosexual. And he lived in a time when homosexuality was a criminal activity and illegal. And one day somebody accused him of being a homosexual. And he took them to court to try and clear his name. Even though he really was a homosexual, he tried to clear his name. But he was found out. And he was found out, the truth was found out. And he was sent to prison for 2 years for his homosexuality. But he advocated, friends, in his books and through his writings, oh, we should be allowed to express our inner selves freely. There should be no restriction on what we want, what we feel, what we want to do. We should be able to just express ourselves. And this is what he fought for. This is what he desired and advocated for. He pushed for the abolition of marriage, which he felt was restricting people from expressing those inner desires. Oh, we should be free to sleep with whoever we want to sleep with. Marriage is restrictive. Remove that standard. Remove God's standards. Let us be free. This is the kind of sensual person he'd become. He'd allowed this power within him to become so strong that it dominated his life. Well, friends, is any of us like that? Are we also sensual people? Is this the major driving force in our lives? Or is it perhaps the second one, the lust of the eyes? John says, all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes. Some people are driven by the desire, that inner desire for possessions, for things that they can see. Or they see what other people have. They see the good things that other people have. They see the luxurious things maybe people have. And they want that those things. They see the adverts that are on TV and they're hooked. And they covet this product or that product for themselves. If only I can get these things in my life, then I will be happy. Then I will be content. If only I can purchase this place or this substance, then I'll be fine. I'll be pleased. I'll be happy. Or maybe they long for some kind of lifestyle. They see that somebody else is living. They see a rich person with a beautiful home and with a lovely car, and everything seems to be wonderful for them. Life seems to be easy for them. And they look at that and they covet that kind of lifestyle with riches and with ease and with the comforts and modcons of this life. They may not have attained these things themselves, but they look for them. They look with that mind's eye for them. They look with that imagination and in their dreams. This is what they are thinking of. This desire is so strong within them. They are thinking, this is the kind of happy life that I need to have. If I'm surrounded by all these lovely things, oh, my life will be wonderful. It will be tremendous. I'll be so happy. That is the idea, friends, that they see this will be their pleasure. Is that us, friends? A materialist kind of person? A person who can only find their happiness in things that fade away, in things that rust, in things that break down. Is this us, friends? Possessions is everything to us? Is there no character, only possessions? A person like this, friends, well, there is no real character. There is no depth to this kind of person. A person who lives only for possessions is a very shallow person and doesn't have much inner depth, and only thinking about these material things. Or I have to say, friends, if we go after the things of this world, it'll deter us, it'll be a hindrance to us coming to Christ. Because if you do have many things in life, if you do surround yourself with many of the comforts in life, well, then quite likely you'll think, I don't need God. Quite likely you think, I don't need Christ. I don't need salvation. I'm happy as I am. Why do I need Christ? You see, they may be a hindrance to us. They may indispose us to spiritual things. Or then thirdly, there's the pride of life. What's that? Well, reputation in life, we could call it that. In the Far East, they call it face, having an appearance to other people, a desire to be admired, to be respected by other people, the ambition to be praised by our neighbors, to be praised by our colleagues, be complimented by our family and our friends for what we've achieved in life. We want to be noticed. We want to be recognized. We want to stand out from the crowd. This is the kind of person that John has in mind. This kind of person is not content to be a nobody, but this desire in his heart is pushing him to be a somebody, to stand out from the crowd, to take in what other people are saying. Other people's opinions about him matter. They matter. How do I look? How do I come across? What do people think about me? He's not shy to show off. He's not shy to drop into the conversation his achievements or his successes, his educational background, his position, his postcode. All these things he does so that he can get some kudos with people and he can get the compliments from people. And he seeks the pride of life. And this is what he lives for. It's within him. Well, there's nothing wrong, friends, in achieving, nothing wrong in going to the top, nothing wrong in being successful, but this person pursues all these things in order to get a name for himself. He must have feedback. He cannot live without feedback. He cannot live with some well done or some compliment coming his way. What a way to live life. A way just to live for the praise of the neighbors and the admiration of other people and never think about the soul and never think about your eternal consequences of where you're heading. Never think about God. Well, friends, these are the things that form so many of us. But it was never meant to be. This is not how we were meant to be. We were meant to be shaped by God himself. We were meant to be governed by the Lord and formed and go on, be in his likeness, be in his character. That is what he designed us to be. Not to allow these sinful things to so dominate and rule us and control us. Why allow ourselves to be shaped, friends, by these baser things? Verse 17 says, "The world passeth away, and the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abides forever." All these things that are in the world, they're only for a time. If you get all the possessions in the world, if you get all the praise in the world that you desire, it's only for a time. All those things will pass away. And when eternity comes, when we all enter into eternity, there will be no more. Friends, God calls us to a higher life, a life of knowing him, a life of allowing him to teach us, to train us, to guide us, to mold us, to shape us into a better person, a more useful person, with much higher aspirations than just this earth and just this world. In verse 15, we read about another group of people. If any man love the world, we read about the love of the Father. This other group of people who have come to discover another love in their hearts, the love of God, and this is the formative experience, the forming power in their lives. On one group, it's the love of the world, but this group, they've come to know another love. A separate love, a different love, a more powerful love, a better love which has changed them for the better. And that is the love of God. They've come to know, firstly, God's love for them. That Christ came into the world to break the power of those sins in their lives. That Christ came to set them free from those things that hold them back and control them and spoil their lives and separate them from God. Christ came to break those powers in their life. And Christ came to reconcile them to God. What great love that Christ should come from heaven to do these things for us, who were his enemies, who were in enmity against him, who had nothing for him. And he came in such a mighty love to save his people. And we see his love especially in the cross, where the Lord Jesus died in such great agony and pain, in terrible agony for sinners, that anyone who believes in him should come to know the forgiveness of their sins, that God the Father sent his Son in great love to die, to be punished, to go through the agonizing death for sinners. Oh, there is no love like the love of God, like the love of Christ. Friends, this has touched people, the believers' heart. And when believers see this love of God, they respond also with love to him. And that's what we need. We need another love in our hearts, a stronger love, this love for God in our hearts. And that will change us and make us a better people, to see how Christ came in great love for us to save us and heal us and bless us. He will make us, friends, this love of the Father, but it will make us less selfish. If we are formed by this love, if this is the motivation in our hearts, if this is the ruling power in our hearts, it will make us a less selfish people. It will make you a kinder person. It will make you more gentle in the way you deal with other people, more thoughtful, more helpful as a person. It will open your hand, make you a more generous person. It will make you a humble person. You won't be proud. You won't be seeking vain things in this world. You won't be an ambitious person in the wrong way. You will be a more loving person. These are the changes that come as we know God's love and respond in love to him. Friends, this is character. This is true character. This is a much better character. This is what God would have you and I to be. Isn't it better than living for just ourselves and living for those baser things, possessions or earthly sensual things or the praise of man? Those are so base. Those are so little in comparison to the deep work that God promises to do to those who look to him and trust in him. Dear friends, this is what we need. This is the kind of change that we need. We need Christ to change us and change us individually. We need his salvation in our lives. We need, yes, his forgiveness. It begins with that. We need a new life. We need a new love in our hearts to expel this love of the world. Oh Lord, may the Lord help us, each one, to know, come to him, friends. Pray to him, cry to him, ask him, if you don't have this love, come sincerely before him and ask him to give it to you and to change you and to make you a better man or woman for his name's sake. Let's close by singing.